The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning Glory America, Bonjour High, Canada, Hugh Hewitt from Inside the Beltway. On Friday, September the 17th, in the year of our Lord, 2021, and the weekend is upon us. I hope you have a good one. I want to begin your weekend, perhaps, with a story of heroism before going to the reality of our shame. The story of heroism comes from the Great Britain's Telegraph. The first newspaper I read in the morning is the Financial Times, the second is the Telegraph. Then the Times of Israel, then I get to the American papers. They always start earlier, right? So they're hours ahead of us, so the news cycle's a little bit more developed. This story, though, I got yesterday afternoon from a friend, sent this to me. So I cannot claim credit for having spotted it. It showed up last night. I put it online. It went everywhere. And I've reposted it because it makes you realize there are heroes. We have lots of heroes in the United States, especially in the military. Who and the police force and the firefighters, we celebrate them on September 11th, and then we forget them too often. We celebrate them on Memorial Weekend and on Veterans Day, and then we forget them. But I'll tell you, every day in the world there are heroes. The headline of this is, dozens of Afghan women rescued from Kabul in the first ever Israeli-Emirati aid mission. Remember, a year ago, Donald Trump presided over the Abraham Accords that the United Arab Emirates and Israel signed, bringing a warm peace to the Middle East, followed soon by Bahrain and other countries. The story reads, Israeli aid workers and the United Arab Emirates have completed a daring rescue mission that saw dozens of sportswomen, female rights activists, and a singer at risk of Taliban reprisals spirited to safety in Abu Dhabi. The nail-biting evacuation used local contacts to gather 41 Afghans from various locations in Kabul and then bust them through Taliban checkpoints and over the northern border into Tajikistan before flying them to the United Arab Emirates. The Israeli-Emirati mission, which happened earlier this month, is the first joint humanitarian project between the two Middle Eastern countries and is part of a growing cooperation following the signing of the Abraham Accords last year, which normalized relations. Speaking to the Telegraph, Yotsen Polizer, the CEO of Israeli Aid, or IsraAid, and the team behind the secretive evacuation had to be extremely careful while collecting the young women from across Kabul without alerting the Taliban. The issue was they had to do the collecting from hiding, Mr. Polizer said. They, the rescuers, had to do the rounds around the city and alleys to pick up these people and try not to create any suspicious movement. The evacuees included a prominent Afghan singer, 19 cycling team members, 3 robotics team members, their relatives, and a number of human rights activists. Some of the relatives evacuated were men. All were considered to be at risk of reprisal from the Taliban, which has cracked down on female sports players and other performers since taking over Afghanistan last month. After clearing several checkpoints while driving across the country's north, the escapees were temporarily stuck at the Tajikistan border, forcing the young women to spend a tantalizing 2-day period in a nearby safe house as they awaited permission to cross. The stressful part really was around the border. There were a lot of Taliban in the area. They were not allowed to leave the shelter, and we were very stressed that someone might find them, Mr. Polizer said. The rescue team eventually secured permission from the president of Tajikistan to cross the border, at which point Israeli aid workers met the girls in the capital of Dushanbe. They were then escorted onto a jet chartered by the Canadian-Israeli billionaire Sylvan Adams, which arrived in the United Arab Emirates in the early hours of September 6. Mr. Adams also helped in lobbying Tajikistan's government, among others, to support the rescue. The operation was highly politically sensitive as the Taliban despises Israel and recently said it was the only country with which its government would not focus relations. So you know that the Taliban is going to despise the UAE as well. Good for the UAE and good for Israel. The evacuees were picked up with the help of female activists who reached out to the aid group, and the mission was partly assisted by an anonymous family foundation. The rescue was first revealed by Afra Hameli, the UAE's Deputy Director of Strategic Communications, in a post on Twitter. Afra Al-Hamali wrote, working alongside international partners to ensure those in need reach safety, the UAE has welcomed 41 Afghan evacuees, including vulnerable members from the Afghan Girls Cycling and Robotic Teams, as well as at-risk human rights activists and their family members. The UAE is just, it's called Little Sparta. James Mattis told me that. General Mattis did an event at the Nixon Library, Nur Belinda, with me. And I asked him about, what do you think about UAE? Now, I know the ambassador, Youssef Ataiba, pretty well. And I hope he would say something good. I didn't know he would say they are Little Sparta. They are the greatest punching power per inch in the Middle East, along with Israel. And now they're working together. Good. Bravo to both of them. Now the bad. My Washington Post column this morning, which is on the landing page at the Washington Post, and I hope you will go and read it, is about, well, it's in the title that they picked. We must own our complicity in Afghanistan. The United States' shame, I write, over its precipitous sprint out of Afghanistan will shadow this country's conscience for a generation. Every horror story, and they will keep coming, is partly the result of our decision to bug out. The death and destruction that occur in previously secure parts of that country will be on the bipartisan decision to exit. The fiasco of President Biden's ordered quick march out of the country, with its arbitrary deadline and false proclamations of a heroic airlift effort, will garner the most shame. But Barack Obama and Donald Trump all wanted the same thing. They wanted out, too. All three presidents lacked what Abraham Lincoln possessed and George W. Bush often displayed: the strength to shoulder the suffering of war brought home in dead and wounded young soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines. The country tired of it, too. We do not have the ability to fight a long war, even with minimal casualties, because for us, there is no such thing as a minimal casualty. We can station troops on borders. We can do peacekeeping missions like in Kosovo, but we cannot endlessly endure the loss of American life to enemy combatants. So we left. But our greatest sin is to have left without first overseeing an exodus of those who were desperate to run from barbaric theocracy. We did a portion of the saving at the last minute, and those tens of thousands who did escape will be forever grateful for the 11 Marines, one Navy corpsman, and one Army soldier who gave their lives that those refugees might live. But for 20 years, we pretended, all of us, that some sort of middle ground might emerge between the darkest midnight and the dawn of democracy. Turns out there wasn't such a middle ground. And yet we owed an exit to those who relied on false hope. We are a nation of some 330 million. We are large enough, and our allies are numerous enough that we could have saved hundreds of thousands more. We chose not to do so. Shame, shame on us. We also told ourselves for years that Afghanistan was the good war, launched to fight Al-Qaeda, and Iraq was the misguided one. It will turn out that the invasion of Iraq advanced peace and stability far more than in Afghanistan because it allowed a Sunni-Israeli alliance to emerge against Iran's Shiite theocrats. We have not been shrewd, but we could not allow the Islamic State to dominate the Middle East. Obama's withdrawal of U.S. forces from Iraq in 2011 was precipitous and disastrous. It had to be reversed. And as a result, while nothing compared with the Western democracies in Iraq, it is still a violent place, but not without hope. There is no hope in Afghanistan, though there is a near certainty of attacks against our country and our interests emanating from there. An advanced safe haven for the planet's most fanatic Sunni Islamist extremists is now next door to the home of the globe's most fanatic Shiite Islamist extremists. My bet is that we will have to go back to Afghanistan, but not before another horrific attack on us. Singer-songwriter John Androzic has written a gut-punch song from the pullout entitled Blood on My Hands, which takes aim at Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, among others. Facebook briefly blocked a promoted post for the song, saying the post violated the platform's advertising rules. Imagine Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young not being able to promote Ohio because it slammed Richard Nixon. We cannot come to grips with what we have wrought by erasing those who were left behind. We cannot move on from our complicity. The Taliban, Al-Qaeda, ISIS-K, these terrorist groups will not take care to indulge our amnesia. The bodies will pile up. the horrific executions will leak out. That's on Biden. What has happened, though, over 20 years? That's on all of us. We promised so much more. Afghans relied on so much more. Then we got tired and left. It is that simple. So there you have the good and the bad for Friday. The great, actually, the heroic, the courageous. United Arab Emirates and Israeli, longtime hostile forces, now friends, working together to save dozens of Afghan women and human rights activists, athletes, and robotics teams. That's great. That's a movie. That's another On the Wings of Ingalls for Ken Follett and the shameful America's Bug Out. I'll be back with more news as we head into the weekend. Jesse McCarthy of Harvard, one of the nation's emerging preeminent African-American intellectuals, joined me. Don't miss that in the last hour. The Hillsdale Hour is number two today. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show, at the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin Resveratrol Omega. Temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains. Temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains. And you can't do better than that three-week starter pack, $19.95.
Welcome back, America. On Friday, I do two things. I talk about the movies with Sonny Bunch, and I talk about the college football scene with Douglas Marys, because everyone should take a little bit of fun on Friday. But I got to ask Sonny Bunch a political question. Sonny, how are you?
I'm good, Hugh. How are you?
Good. I just got to ask, are you surprised by this fact? Over 10 years, President and Mrs. Biden made donations to charity. Those donations totaled, what does Sonny Bunch guess?
Do you want a percentage or a total?
Like a 10
total
years.
Cash of, total.
Yeah, I mean, remember, he's a regular mass attender.
I don't know. Let's say
$10,000. $3,690.
That's not very much money. He should donate more money than that. I donate more money than that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're giving 10 bucks a week at mass, you're donating. And he got at that time $775,000 from the University of Pennsylvania over 2 years. And, of course, $400,000 bucks a year. I'm just kind of stunned. All right, tell me what...
He spends more than that on watches. Come on.
It's just getting Hunter out of jail took more money than that. Talk to me a little bit about Cry Macho, because I'm
Cry
going to go
Macho.
See it. I am going to go see it.
Yeah, so I went to go see it in a theater last night, Hugh, which I think the theater messed up. I don't think the theater was supposed to have it in theaters yet, because...
No, they weren't. It's supposed to start today.
Because it's supposed to start today, because it's debuting simultaneously on theaters and HBO Max. So I think my local draft house may have goofed a little bit. I'm not going to say anything to them about it, because I want them to goof again in the future.
Oh,
so
good.
I can see things on Thursday night. So it is on. It's on HBO Max now. You can turn off the radio and turn on HBO Max if you want.
No. Wait till tonight.
Wait for Hugh to be done.
Yeah,
but it's on HBO Max. It's also in theaters. It is in theaters. So if you want to see it in theaters like I did, you can go do that as well. But Cry Macho is the latest from Clint Eastwood. It's his latest directorial effort and his latest starring effort. He is back in front of the camera as well as behind the camera. And it is about a guy who is a, you know, broken down rodeo cowboy who has to go down to Mexico to get his old boss's son out of trouble. He's got to get him out of Mexico and back up into the United States. And, you know, that's the very basic plot. It is one of these kind of late Clint Eastwood, you know, you don't have to be tough and macho. It's not necessarily the best way to live, right? Something along the lines of The Mule, or even stretching back to Gran Torino or Unforgiven. He's been kind of making this sort of movie for almost 30 years now.
Is it fair to say he's meditating on aging?
meditating on age and aging. And so I want to say one thing about this movie, and that it looks very good. It is shot in a way that takes advantage of the natural beauty of the American West, you know, lots of big sweeping vistas and mountains and stretches of, you know, wide open skies and that sort of thing. So it's very much a neo-Western. It kind of takes advantage of that American, sensibility. And it's directed very, very efficiently by Clint Eastwood. This is it's an hour and 40 minutes or so. It zips along, despite the fact that really not very much happens in this movie. It is not it's not a movie with big action set pieces. It's not a big exciting movie. It's a very personal kind of more of an adult drama of the sort that we don't get a ton of anymore. But just despite the fact that, again, there's not a ton that happens, it moves along very nicely. You get from scene to scene and moment to moment. But there's a big problem with this movie, Hugh. And I feel bad saying it. I feel really bad saying it. But Clint Eastwood is 92 years old, or 91 years old. He's in his 90s. And he is playing a character who is asked to occasionally be physically imposing, to threaten people with violence and to have that threat carry weight. He is a character who is very attractive to women. Women throw themselves at him, practically. He is a character who is forced to get back to bronco busting, to get back to, like, breaking Mustangs and, you know, making them tame horses again, which involves a lot of him riding on the backs of bucking broncos, which in the movie means that you have a lot of wide shots of somebody wearing Clint Eastwood's jacket riding a horse that is bucking around, and then a lot of very tight shots on Clint Eastwood, who's clearly on, like, a plank of wood or something as he's being kind of rocked back and forth. He's too old for this role. He's too old for this role by 20 years. He might have been able to get away with this when he was the age he made Gran Torino.
He wasn't too old for the mule, because the mule involved driving a car.
Well, the mule involved driving a car, and the whole point of the mule. So the mule came out in 2018, came out 4 years ago, and it starred Clint Eastwood as an old man who was being used by the cartels to carry drugs back and forth across the border. And the reason he was being used is because he was so old, because nobody expected this old man, you know, driving his car 40 miles an hour on the highway to also be carrying, you know, 1,000 pounds of heroin or whatever, right? Like, it made sense. And even the stuff in the mule that is kind of similar to some of the stuff here, like, for instance, there's a scene in the mule where he is hanging out with the cartels, and the cartel boss has two of the cartel ladies go with him for some fun times, trying to keep this as family friendly as possible. And it's almost funny. It's almost a funny scene because it's so ridiculous. But again, in this movie, in Cry Macho, he has women just throwing themselves at him as if they are, you know, as they are.
Okay, pause right there, Sonny. I got to ask you, do you remember Robert Redford in The Company You Keep, a 2012 film that plays him as an aging radical on the run, literally on the run from the Bureau? And we laughed all the way through it because he can't run anymore. And his old flames are still gorgeous, and they're throwing it. There comes a point when you can't be that act. Infirmity catches up with everyone. This is actually the story of the Biden presidency, and maybe that's what we will remember from Cry Macho. I will still go to see it. Should people still go to see it?
I liked it fine. I can't give it a thumbs up, really. It doesn't work for me because Clint Eastwood does not work in this role for me. And it's a movie about it. I mean, he's in every scene. He's in every shot, basically. He is the center of the movie, and he simply does not work. And look, here's the thing. I don't think Clint Eastwood is infirmed, because a 92-year-old man who is still directing a, you know, $20 million motion picture is not an infirm person. He is a guy who is in charge of an enormous production. He is you know, he's got people running around all over set doing things. It is not easy to direct a motion picture.
Yeah, I got to argue with this on this, Sonny. You know, Joe Biden is infirm and he's running the world, but he's infirm because he got Ron Klain, and Ron Klain's the prime minister. So isn't there a position for someone where the studio says, we want Clint, we'll pretend to let him direct, and he gets all the money? Now, I know Clint Eastwood. I've met him. I can't say I know him. I've met him. Yeah. He did not seem infirm to me 5 years ago, but I don't know what he liked now.
Well, everybody who meets him says the same thing, that he is still there. He's still sharp. He still is working hard. I think he is fine intellectually, and I think that he is, again, it's not an easy thing to direct a movie. It's not an easy thing to make a picture like this and to do interview circuits and all that stuff. So I think he is still there, but he is not suited for this sort of work in front of a camera. He can't make another movie like this. It's not.
Well, you know what? Part of the rumination on age might be showing that you have to give some things up by showing that you have to give some things up. Sonny Bunch is across the movie aisle, back in production.
Yeah, across the movie aisle is great. Yeah, we've got The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. I had a couple of great interviews this week. One with Rob Lurie, who is the director of The Contender and The Outpost and a bunch of other movies and TV shows.
Well, then we will go.
He had some great stories about working in Hollywood. He had this really funny one about Bill Paxton. So Rod used to be a film critic before he was a filmmaker.
That's the arc of Sonny Bunch's life right there. Sonny, we will go listen to The Bulwark Goes to the Movie and Across the Movie Aisle. Follow Sonny at Sonny Bunch on Twitter. Follow me, if you will, to Birch Gold. And I have to get my sponsors in because it's a radio show. And Rush used to say obscene profit breaks. I like to say people that I trust, which includes Birch Gold. And I really do. That's who I buy my gold from. And you can go find it at HughGold.com, HughGold.com. I laughed the other day. I saw that there was an article that conservative talk shows have sponsors from gold. Well, yeah. And it's sort of like, and newspapers have sponsors from movie theaters. Yeah. What? Who do you buy your gold from? Because if you're a conservative, you're serious about diversification and you have precious metals, I buy it from Birch Gold. Gold went down to $1,765 an ounce. It is truly low. Now, I have a high buy point because of the way I worry about inflation. I don't have a low buy point, but if you have a low buy point, gold is at $1,765. That might be it. You can buy it from Birch Gold or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. Or you can get the free information kit and roll over a portion of your IRA or 401k. You may have been waiting for it to get back to $1,750. I don't see that happening, but I'm not a prophet nor the son of a prophet. Thank you, Yoni. $1,765 an ounce Birch Gold, but you got to go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. Welcome back. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I listen to 4 podcasts a week, every episode of them, and that gives me a problem because my next guest, Doug Lemarise, hosts 3 of them, and along with Shihan Rajajet. Help me with the last name. I can't get Shihan's name yet, Doug.
Jeharaja.
Here's my problem. I'm like you on a podcast. I'm supposed to do 2 things. Look at the College Football Week last week and the College Football Week coming up because you do the College Football Podcast show, the College Football Playoff show on podcast every week. But I can't remember what I heard you say because I listened to 3 podcasts in which you were – I don't know which podcast it was on, but somewhere you said you covered the 5 stages of football fan grief. And I'm in – stage 1, I'm still shocked at Ohio State losing to the Ducks. So I couldn't bring myself to listen to the College Football Playoff Show podcast because I'm afraid you kicked them out. Did you do that?
No. They're still safe. We kicked out Iowa State for losing to Iowa. Ohio State hanging on by a thread after losing at home to an Oregon team that did not have its best player. And the program is wondering if they need new defensive coaches. But other than that, Ohio State's still okay.
Is Kerry Combs, because this was in Buckeye Talk, one of Doug's other podcasts, the funniest 10 minutes in radio I've heard, which is not on radio, is the offensive coordinator room with the defensive coaches coming over and grabbing people. Is that happening at Ohio State? Because, man, that was bad. That was very bad.
I think they're on the edge. It's one of those things, Hugh. They do try to steal each other's guys sometimes because Ohio State has so many good offensive players and they have some holes on defense. Listen, a guy like Ted Ginn Jr., for instance, 15 years ago at Ohio State, he started off on defense. They stole him and put him on offense. So that I don't think they're doing that, though. They're trying to fix the defense in other ways.
All right, now tell people about last week's most important game and this week's most important game because the College Football Playoff Show podcast is about that.
Yeah, so two big games we talked about last week that were important. Iowa did beat Iowa State in that showdown in the Hawkeye State. Iowa's a legit contender at this point. Great defense. Tyler Goodson, really good running back. Kirk Ferentz, great coach. But Oregon's upset in Ohio Stadium was a bigger deal because the Pac-12 that Oregon is part of in the 7 years so far, the playoff, the Pac-12's only been in twice. People forget the Pac-12 exists. They have their own network.
That gives me great joy, by the way. I hate USC, so that gives me great joy.
Yeah, for real. The team that should be the best team in the Pac-12 fired its coach this week. So the fact that Oregon got that win is good for that entire conference. So that was the biggest game last week, for sure. You had that right. I had that wrong, Hugh. You're showing me up.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You know, professional amateurs, sometimes the latter get it right and sometimes the former get it wrong. What about this weekend? First of all, Ohio State has to win every game, including beating a dominant Iowa to get into the finals, right?
There's never been a two-loss team to make the college football playoff. It's only four teams get in. This is the eighth year of it. So two losses, you're basically out. So, yes, that is true. It looks like Ohio State and Iowa could be on a collision course in the Big Ten championship. Two games I'm looking at this week. One is a different team in the state of Ohio. And right now in the state of Ohio, Ohio State is not the highest-ranked team, which is shocking. Cincinnati plays at Indiana this week. Cincinnati is not in one of the power conferences. So those smaller teams, they've got to really show a lot to have a shot at the playoff. Indiana was good last year. And then in 2 weeks, Cincinnati's playing Notre Dame. If Cincinnati wins both those games, they'll really be in that playoff conversation. And in the conversation is maybe better than Ohio State, at least this year. But the other game is Bama. And everybody loves Bama. And the deal with Bama is who doesn't love dominance? Nick Saban's the greatest college football coach of all time. I know.
Doug, everything on this show revolves around whether or not people in Ohio love or hate the program. And I hate Alabama. So go ahead.
You hate and admire them, Hugh. Yes. We know that. You admire them from a distance. Yeah. They play at Florida. Bama is a 2-touchdown favorite, but Florida plays 2 quarterbacks. You can say usually, hey, the saying is if you have 2 quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. Right now, I don't think that's true at Florida. They have Emory Jones, and the backup is a guy named Anthony Richardson, who looks like an offensive tackle playing quarterback. I think the 2-quarterback system for Florida has a chance as a 2-touchdown underdog to give Bama trouble. That defense is so good, you got to give them something they don't expect. Both Florida quarterbacks are going to play. I'm intrigued. I'm not calling an upset, but I'm intrigued by that game.
Okay, I have one thing for you to think about. USC fired Clay Helton. They go to Urban Meyer, and they say, hey, name your price, but Urban Meyer doesn't care about money. Urban Meyer wants to save higher education in America, and USC is flat on its back because of 2 different scandals, declining enrollment, a devastated football program, and they should be. And he comes out and says, I love the Jacksonville Jaguars. I would love to be here. I got to save college football. I got to save the Pac-10. I'm going to Southern California. Possible?
This is the Hugh Hewitt theory of Lori Loughlin leads Urban Meyer to USC. It's all connected. We get it now. Who knew? Who knew? Listen, we've seen there's a history of college coaches going to the NFL and then coming back. Nick Saban did it. Urban's been there for a week. So, like, you got to give him a little bit of a run. He has to, I think, adjust his
style. It's not about Urban. It's about saving USC, which, honest to God, needs saving because they're in the worst place they've been in my 30 years in California. Doug is the host of the College Football Playoff Show on podcast. You should listen to it every single episode and subscribe. Listen to it for free, and they'll tell you the number. You get it for free for 3 weeks. It's $1 a month. Go do it and come back. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money
to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning glory, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway on this Friday. I must tell you, I'm very rarely stunned. If you've been listening to this radio show for 20 years, or I've been on the air for 30 years, 32 years, actually. If you've been listening to me on the air, I'm just very rarely stunned. Nothing much new happens. But I think Congresswoman Wagner from Missouri will agree with me that this migrant business under the Texas bridge. I was going to talk to you exclusively about Afghanistan, Congresswoman, but now I see thousands of migrants from Haiti under a Texas bridge. What do you think?
Oh, it's outrageous. You realize, Hugh, that, and first of all, it's great to be with you and your listeners. I can tell you, I was down in the Rio Grande Valley and I spent time down there. We've had nearly 1.5 million illegal migrants come across our southern border since Joe Biden stopped the Trump policies and opened our borders to catch and release. And they're coming in droves because the court is getting ready to put back in place the Remain in Mexico policy that worked so well. And they're flooding us. And those are the ones we're apprehending, too. There are many others that are getting
the reason
across.
This stuns me, I am applauding America's decision to admit 37,000 Afghan refugees because we absolutely screwed the Afghan people who depended upon us. And that's what refugees are for. The Taliban will kill them. The Haiti exodus, these Haitians went to South America first and then moved up to Central America. And they're heading to the United States because they perceive that the Biden administration has set Ali in free. And we've got this we can't take the people we should take because we're getting people that shouldn't be coming here, Congresswoman. It's kind of catastrophic. I think the Biden administration may be in effective collapse. Do you agree with me?
I do agree on every issue, whether it has to do with just a mess at the border and the fact that they have turned a blind eye to it. They won't speak about it. They won't recognize it. I was down there with 20-year veterans of our Border Patrol that say they feel abandoned by their American government and by this administration. And I'll tell you, I got on planes from McAllen, Texas. Everybody had an envelope. They were being sent right into the interior. Every single state, even Missouri, my state, in the middle, we are all border states as a result of Joe Biden's fallen policy. You can go into inflation. You can go into this incredible outrageous spending that he's doing. Afghanistan, which, you know, I did a hearing on earlier this week, is and remains an absolute shameful disaster. And
let's pause on that. That's why I wanted to get you on. I watched and applauded your statement to Secretary Blinken because you were angry. And I'm glad somebody was angry with him. Nobody has resigned. You said he should resign. Many members of Congress said he should resign. Has anybody resigned? Do you expect anybody to resign over what is a debacle?
I don't. In fact, what we heard from Secretary Blinken at the hearing that we had in the House, and then again the second one in the Senate, was just the blame game and dodge. And we, they don't, he says he'll take personal responsibility. Well, if he takes personal responsibility, the buck should stop with him and he should resign. They double down on the fact that they believe this was a success, Hugh, at a cost of 13 American lives, $85 billion of our extreme military equipment, the top notch, our Bagram Air Base, our U.S. embassy, our credibility with our allies, and as you said, the Afghans who stood and fought with us, who fought with my son who served time over in Afghanistan, and our national security and the safety of our homeland. I told him, make no mistake, this inept withdrawal has left America and the world a much less safe place 20 years after September 11th. He went on. He blamed the Taliban. He said at least three times to me The Taliban made it clear. The Taliban made it clear. Clear of what? That we had to withdraw or they would escalate. He blamed it on Putin, who's now dictating our counterintelligence. He blamed it on NATO. He blamed it on Trump. And when I said, do you take any personal responsibility for this disastrous withdrawal, or do you still want to call it a, quote, success? He went on to say it was the right thing to do and that he stood by it. He takes responsibility, and I said, resign then.
He filibustered over you. I was really angry because you are allowed to reclaim your time as a Congress member, and you said, I reclaimed my time, and he wouldn't shut up. And I think he knew it was coming. I heard you over his talking saying, then resign. Good for you.
Well, I appreciate that, and I feel very passionate about this. I spent the better part of the last 2 weeks, this community here in the greater St. Louis metro area is in mourning. Yesterday, we buried Lance Corporal Jared Schmitz, a Wensfield, Missouri native, a selfless hero who died as a Lance Corporal in the Marine Corps at 20 years old. He enlisted and had his parents' signature, enlisted at 17 years old. And when I sat with his parents over the weekend on September 11th, actually, at the visitation, they told me, his father told me, he wants answers. He wants accountability. And I told him I would start to get it on Monday morning, and we did.
Off air, I have something to tell you, and so don't go away after we go off the air, because I can't say it on the air, but I want you to know about it. I did not know that your son served. Which branch of the military is he in, or was?
In the Army. He attended West Point as a result of September 11th, like so many young men and women did. They stepped up to the call of duty, and he went on to branch infantry. He was an Army Ranger, and yes, he served in Afghanistan, and this mother spent wakeless nights, as every other mother, wife, family member, father, on my knees, praying for his safety and security and that of our other service members. And what happened here at the end with Joe Biden and Anthony Blinken outsourcing the safety of our military that were patrolling and protecting the Kabul airport. They outsourced their security to the Taliban. To the Taliban. To brutal terrorists. It is outrageous. Outrageous. And I'm telling you, they were given a plan. They had a plan. A plan for withdrawal and drawdown that was left them, that was conditions-based. And instead, they made it a chaotic race for the exit queue. And that's what we witnessed.
What does your son think of what has happened over the last 7 weeks, Congresswoman Wagner?
Well, we wrote an op-ed together.
I didn't know that.
On Fox News about the interpreters early on. As soon as Bagram was handed over, he called me and said, "This is it, Mom. This is going to get bad." And he was right. And he was worried about the interpreters that he talked about. It's a very poignant piece. I'll send it to you, or you can look it up. It was on FoxNews.com, and
I can find that. Yeah, I will. Yeah, what's his first name?
His name is Raymond. Raymond Webb.
Okay, I'll find Raymond and Ann. I can do that. Okay.
And it, but yes, I mean, there we have so many at our district office that we're hearing from, that veterans that need help and services. They've been triggered by this. They are sick. They wonder if their service meant something. We're doing everything we can to tell them their service did matter. Their fight for freedom and for liberty matters, and that we honor their service, just as we honored the service of Lance Corporal Jared Schmitz this week when he was laid to rest at Jefferson Barracks here in Missouri 2nd District.
I talked to an Afghan in America yesterday, and that's what I want to tell you about off air afterwards. And right. This Afghan told me that for 20 years, a generation of freedom-loving Afghans has grown up because of the efforts of your son and every other American member of the military, both who served in Afghanistan, who are served in the support rank, and that might make a difference in how long the Taliban can hold on to power. So they did not. It's not wasted. It was so important. Do you think they know that?
I don't know. I hope so. I know they've been dealt a bad blow now of seeing it among my own colleagues who fought in the military. They're now serving in Congress. I see it with my own son. I see it with the veterans that are contacting our office. They're upset. And again, they want answers. They want accountability. Secretary of State Blinken should resign. He should resign, and there needs to be a full-on and ongoing investigation. And I'm insulted and outraged that they call this a success.
You and me both. Representative Ann Wagner from Missouri's 2nd Congressional District. You can follow her on Twitter at Rep. Ann Wagner, W-A-G-N-E-R. I'll talk to you in just a moment, Congresswoman. My op-ed on the shame of America is over at thewashingtonpost.com. We have to own this, and Ann Wagner does, and God bless her for that. I'll be right back, America Live from the Beltway. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Hear the latest reporting and analysis on the big stories of the day on the Daybreak Insider podcast. It's top-notch reporting from SRN News, along with the sharpest insight from Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, Dennis Prager, Sebastian Gorka, and the voices of townhall.com. The Daybreak Insider podcast. It's your first look at today's top stories. Available at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and at salempodcastnetwork.com.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.